podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Thanks for choosing this free Anfield Index podcast. If you'd prefer to listen to this or any of our other shows without adverts, then now's the time to check out Anfield Index Pro. With AI Pro, you can supercharge your entire listening experience. You'll not only get all of our podcasts without the ads, but you'll have them far faster with our quick publish feature available exclusively for subscribers. AI Pro also puts you in the heart of our sound studio, with an option to listen to many of our shows live and interact with the podcasters in real time as the shows are recording. Upgrading couldn't be easier. AI Pro is available on all popular podcast platforms, and we have our own apps for Apple and Android. Just head on over to AnfieldIndexPro.com and get started today.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are, whatever you're doing. And welcome to another episode of Stat Me Up for Anfield Index. Ladies and gents, in a positive sense, we've not had to do too many of these in this tone in recent times. And the negative side is that it comes on the back of a defeat and exiting the FA Cup at the quarterfinal stage. However, as ever, here to hopefully, I say hopefully, cheer us up with a few stats, look at the positives and go from there, is the man himself, the stat man, the Hungarian hipster, Ben Boxack. Ben, are you ready to accept the challenge of cheering us all up a bit after yesterday?
Yeah, I feel like I also have to take some responsibility as well, because recently I've been wearing this green Liverpool shirt from the official store. It's like a Nike one. And I feel like it's given us a bit of luck over the course of the last few months. I wore it for every single game. And yesterday I forgot to wear it. And obviously we lost, so I feel like it's my fault. I have to take some responsibility for that.
I should hope so too. Yeah, send all inquiries FAO of Benetat, ladies and gents. But I mean, here we are. We're gonna get through it all, Ben. We're gonna talk the United, the defeat in extra time. We're gonna talk the Europa draw. We'll talk about the off the field stuff and the bits that's happened this week. And then last week we pressed you on the strongest midfield. This time, we're going to get your thoughts on the back four specifically as well. So I hope you've done your homework and I hope you've got your stats ready, especially ladies and gents, because I didn't really give him too much time or notice with some of these. So we'll see how we get on. Ben, I mean, let's start from the top. That United game. I mean, aside from processing the results now, honest thoughts in the cold light of day?
I mean, like I was saying off the recording, it just kind of felt like Liverpool had bigger fish to fry, whereas for United, this was their sort of Champions League final. Like, if they didn't win this game, they would have had nothing else to play for the rest of the season. So I really felt like this was a game where they just wanted it a little bit more. And whereas Liverpool maybe had their shoulders looking at the Europa League, the Premier League, some of the international players. I mean, not a lot of them have important games ahead, but it is an international break. So some of them have important games in terms of sort of establishing their place in the European for the European Championships. So, you know, that could have played a role. And obviously the Copa America as well this summer. So even though it doesn't feel like to us they're important games, these friendlies, for some of Liverpool's players anyway, it's going to be important games. And even for the ones who are playing maybe under 21 football, it will be an opportunity to sort of show themselves and maybe get a little bit of a look in ahead of the European Championships. So maybe that had a bit of a role to play. But I feel like, you know, the motivation factor was a big one for United. And I think that's what really spurred them on and spurred the crowd on. And with all that being said, though, like the reason why it feels so frustrating is because it was a game that we should have won.
Yeah.
Even in terms of the performance, we weren't great. United were also not great. And we should have capitalized on it. We had so much possession. We had maybe not as many opportunities, but we had possession where we could have created chances and we could have controlled the game better. So we've only got ourselves to blame as well.
Yeah, it felt that way, it's especially with the, as you mentioned, the chance and the possession. All that sort of good stuff on occasions up until the final third, and then, yeah, gap post 5-2, that'll live long in the memory, won't there? Even Salah was guilty of it. Just the last pass or whatever it was just wasn't quite there. It wasn't happening. And I think Jurgen Klopp talked about it, because I know you love the stat as well, but Liverpool have played 18 times, haven't they, against United's 12 since the turn of the year. So maybe, just maybe, it all catches up with them at once in that regard. And there'll be a lot who are probably a bit disappointed with the performance, a bit disappointed with the result, no doubts about it. Did the stats tell us there were any kind of passable lads yesterday, or lads who should be thinking, all right, you didn't win, but your performance was okay?
Well, I thought, you know, considering we conceded 4 goals, I do think João Kwanza had a good game.
Yeah.
He won 5 out of 8 duels, completed the most passes on the pitch. I think he had 6 clearances, which was the most for Liverpool. 3 interceptions, quite a few recoveries as well. Like, that's a pretty good performance from him.
Yeah.
We saw that little dribble where he beat Rashford and I think Scott McTominay. I can't remember who it was exactly, but yeah, it was a really good run from him. And, you know, to set up Liverpool's equaliser, wasn't it? It was,
yeah.
And then, obviously, that's something that we've kind of seen from him. Ever since he sort of come into the Liverpool team, he got an assist like that against Leicester in the Carabao Cup. We saw him almost scoring against Manchester City last
year. Yes, right.
With a great run, running past Haaland. And that is definitely in his locker. And it's something that when I first started watching him, I spotted, like, he was able to do that. He did that like over 2 years ago now. For England's under-19s in a game against Armenia, where he got an assist with a very sort of similar run that he made against United. And I feel like he's starting to earn those massive comparisons in the way he uses the ball and is capable of beating a few defenders. Well, they're attackers, but in that situation, they're defenders. And I think that's really helpful for Liverpool, especially against teams who drop deep and will defend in low blocks, because it can open up a lot of space for the attackers. And we saw that with the way he created that goal.
Yeah, absolutely. It's strange to say, isn't it? Like you said, in a game where we concede 4, I know there's the extra time element, but I thought he had a good game too. And even there was some great bits of composure as well, that bouncing ball when people were panicking, probably we were panicking as well, but not Jurel Kwanzaa at all. And probably maybe there just isn't. It didn't feel like the forwards had their best day by any means. All three seemed to, even Salah seemed to give the ball away a lot. Nunes, I know, played a part, unfortunately, in their equaliser as well. Any midfielders? Is there anyone else apart from Jurel Kwanzaa? You kind of thought, yeah, their stats aren't too bad. Passable marks at all?
Yeah, I mean, McAllister probably deserves a mention. He created the most chances on the pitch, won the most duels. I know everyone was raving about sort of Kobbie Mainoo and
yeah,
something like he dominated our midfield. I mean, don't get me wrong, he was good, but like when you look at McAllister's stats, it doesn't sound like he was dominated, you know, creating the most chances,
yeah,
won the most duels, he won the most fouls as well in the game, made the second most recoveries, 90% pass completion. I mean, it doesn't sound like Mainoo had him in his pocket, does it? And I think as well, I do think Szoboszlai came under a little bit of unfair criticism. Like, when he was on the pitch, he won the joint most duels with McAllister out of Liverpool's midfielders. He made the joint most recoveries as well alongside McAllister and completed 34 out of his 37 passes. So, like, you know, when we were talking about sort of our attackers not having that sort of final ball,
yeah,
I do think Szoboszlai had that in him. He had a few shooting opportunities, which was unlucky with, got a few shots on target. I think he picked up a lot of good areas as well, but his teammates just couldn't find him at times. There was a moment, I think, when he set up Joe Gomez, which maybe could have gone in inside United's box. So I thought he had a decent game, and I thought once he got off, that's when we sort of felt his impact, because he wasn't on the pitch anymore. He wasn't making those recoveries, and he wasn't winning those duels. And I think as a result, Liverpool's midfield was a little bit weaker. So I did find the criticism a bit strange for him, but I like the stats don't really reflect that.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think maybe looking back, Jurgen Klopp might have some thoughts about whether he should have played the 90 minutes against Sparta in what was essentially, well, a dead rubber at absolute best. And you're right, I think as he went off and a few others, the subs in the bizarrest way, the opposite effect of what they had recently, didn't really give Liverpool what they were looking for yesterday. Not just the subs, but obviously, yeah, that plays a part. And I suppose, Ben, any other stats that you think are worth calling out, sort of the game stats, anything else that tells us or can help us pinpoint what you think it really was that, or the reason I'd say that we'd lost it?
I think we were just poor in transitions and just allowed United to create too many chances from open play. Their XG from open play was 3.97, which is a very high amount. One of the highest we conceded all season. And whereas ours was around 2, which is a very low amount for us this season. We've averaged a lot more. And for some reason, this was just not our game.
Yeah, and that's fair to say. But alas, it is the FA Cup, so it is the lowest of the priorities. I'm never going to say a game against Manchester United is unimportant. That's completely the wrong thing to say. But the lowest of the priorities, an international break beckons, and a chance to reset across the board. And I mean, before this one, for obviously Jurgen Klopp's press conference on the Friday, we got the Europa draw. Now, an interesting one that we've got Atalanta in the quarterfinals. And if we're successful there, we will play the winner of Benfica against Marseille. I mean, on paper, Ben, that looks a pretty good draw. We've got to be honest. I think looking at the teams and where maybe we don't have to travel to, a lot of people would pick that. I mean, stats-wise, let's start against Atalanta, because it wasn't that long ago that we played them, in all honesty, wasn't it? It feels like yesterday. I know it wasn't, but not too long ago.
Yeah, and I think everyone probably remembers the 5-0 away from home rather than the 2-0 at Anfield, and rightly so, because I think that 5-0, we had a pretty much full-strength side and blew them away. And then at Anfield, I think it's kind of not on our priority list at the time. We were pretty much already through at that point, if I remember correctly. And we played, I looked up the starting 11, like Reece Williams was in there, Neco Williams was in there. It's quite a sort of like reserve side. Origi started up front. So like, obviously that defeat comes with a caveat in the sense that Liverpool didn't have their strongest 11 out at the time. And that probably impacted the result. But overall, like, I would say it's a good draw. Gasperini plays sort of attacking football. Scored the fourth highest in Serie A this season. They've also conceded the fifth lowest. But like, what I like about them is they play with the same sort of intensity as the Jurgen Klopp side. So they're very active in the defensive side of the game, recovering possession. They've made the most recoveries in the Serie A this season. They play with very high intensity, but that kind of works to our favour. We are good at teams who play like us, and I think that will open up spaces for us because they'll go forward looking for opportunities, and we've been very good at playing it out from the back now and sort of overcoming that pressure and finding the spaces in those transitions. So I think that definitely works in our favour. We're definitely a lot worse against teams like United who just counter-attack. But yeah, I think looking at their recent form as well, they haven't won in the Serie A anyway in their last 4 games. They were battered by Inter 4-0, which is a good sign. Good draw with AC Milan and Juventus in that time. So, you know, those are pretty tough games. It's been a pretty difficult run of games for them. And they're probably looking for a bit of respite during the international break. But overall, I think this is a nicely balanced tie. It's a game that I think will suit us. It's a game where I think, you know, we can definitely go through and get maybe even big results.
Yeah, you'd hope so. We are red hot favourites, I think it's fair to say. Obviously, as you showed there, not tearing up trees exactly in Serie A. And yeah, we say it every week, but we somehow managed to link this pod to that horrific 2021 season again, full of injuries and Reece Williams playing. It just seems a staple diet of the show, but hey ho, it is what it is. I mean, the other two, we expect to go through. We'll face one of them in Marseille and Benfica. Again, it feels like, and I could just be making this up, that it's not that long ago we've played at least one of these. Have we got recent records against these teams at all?
Yeah, I mean, I'm expecting Benfica to go through in this one. I think, although I think they might have struggled a little bit in the last round from what I can remember. I'm not 100% sure on that, but you know, they just feel like the stronger side of the two. I think Marseille started the season in Ligue 1 on quite a poor form. They've sort of recovered that since, but given the quality of players Benfica have at their disposal, I do expect them to go through in this. And you know, if we look at our recent sort of history with Benfica, we played them in the quarterfinals of the Champions League. That was sort of Darwin Núñez's audition tape where in front of Jurgen Klopp. Sort of a come and sign me, please. And I'm pretty sure Jurgen Klopp didn't just compliment his ability at the time, but also his looks. So clearly he was very convinced by him. I think Núñez scored 2 goals in the tie, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And we won 5-3 on aggregate. It was a pretty comfortable sort of tie for us. It never, even though it was 5-3, which makes it sound closer than it actually was, like from what I remember, we were pretty much very dominant throughout it, and it never looked like it was in any danger in terms of, you know, being eliminated by them. Since then, I think they've gotten weaker. Whereas I would argue, I know that was our sort of when we were fighting for the quadruple, I would argue attackingly anyway, and I overall I would say maybe this team is even better than that quadruple team, just on the performances that we've produced. I think that team, the big Achilles heel of that team was the fact that we couldn't really create a lot of chances from open play, and that really caught us out against Real Madrid. Whereas now we've got a way to open up those low blocks, those defences, and you know, we have tactics against Carlo Ancelotti and the way he sort of just decided to put 10 men behind the ball and counter-attack us. And in a weird way, we showed that against Manchester United, because they kind of tried to do that with us, and we scored 3 goals. I mean, obviously, we also conceded 4, which is not ideal. But overall, over the course of the season, we've shown time and time again we can break down those defenses. So I would say, in some ways, we are better than that team. So again, if it is Benfica, which I expect it to be, we should. Go through.
I don't need a VPN. I've got nothing to hide. This is what I used to tell myself before I hooked up with LibertyShield.com. Not only is my home internet now fully encrypted, but I can now access all the websites I want, whenever I want, and do so from absolutely anywhere. As a Liverpool fan, I love to know I can now watch every match, regardless of whether it's on UK TV or not. My Liberty Shield VPN makes sure nothing is blocked and guarantees me super fast streaming speed throughout that match. You can get connected right now with their software package, which includes a 48-hour no-obligation free trial and instant access to their apps for Apple, Android, Fire TV, PC, Mac, and Android TV. Or go a step further like I have and get one of their pre-configured VPN routers. These small but powerful devices allow you to easily connect every device in your home to VPN, making it the perfect solution for smart TVs, Mac boxes, and games consoles. Visit libertyshield.com today and use coupon code AIVPN25 to get 25% off at checkout.
Yeah, and Benfica, because in the previous round it was Rangers, wasn't it? Glasgow Rangers, they struggled against, just got through, were behind in the tie a couple of times as well. So on that indication, we think as well how we battered Rangers, didn't we, last season, realistically, and how bad we were at times. That, yeah, the indications are it is a very, very good draw. I think that's a fair summary. I mean, one thing for the stats that's worth checking, it feels like a million years since we've been in a Europa League quarterfinal. How do we tend to do once we get to this stage? It does feel like it was a long time ago, but you could be about to correct me on that.
So the last time was obviously in the 2015-16 season. Before that, it was the 2009-10 season. We actually played Benfica in the quarterfinals of that round. And we beat them and then advanced to the semifinals to play against Atletico Madrid, who knocked us out and went on to win the tournament, I'm pretty sure. But overall, I've kind of looked at Liverpool's European record the last 10 times we've made it to the quarterfinals. 8 times we've made it through. The only times that we were eliminated were by Chelsea in the 08-09 season.
Yeah.
I think the second leg was kind of crazy, like a 4-4 draw.
4-4, yeah, I remember that
really
one.
Went for it, yeah. And then it was again the COVID season, which is getting another mention, against Real Madrid. It was a pretty forgettable tie from what I can remember. Pretty depressing to watch with no fans. I'm pretty sure Real Madrid played their home game in their tiny little academy stadium as well. So, it wasn't the greatest of nights for Liverpool. But in general, we tend to do very well and at least make it to the semi-finals. But the majority of the times we make it to the finals. So the last 10 times we made it to this stage, 6 times we've gone on to play in the final. And that dates back to Istanbul, by the way. So, we've done quite well getting to those finals from this stage. And I think given the draw, given, you know, Liverpool's status right now, we have a lot of reasons to believe that we can get to the final again.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we will all have those expectations, and it won't be too long before we get that first leg against Atalanta. And we talked about this a little bit last week, and we're kind of turning to off-the-field matters. We talked about FSG and the second club, and funnily enough, there was a David Ornstein announcement on that, wasn't there, this week? The big story that, I won't pretend I know much about this guy, but Pedro Marquez at Benfica, one of their technical directors, quite heralded, especially in terms of the youth setup at Benfica and what he's put in there. I suppose the natural questions that are coming off the back of that, which, and it's important to say, it seems he's going to be an FSG employee rather than an LFC employee. Important to make that distinction. Do we think that could bring a potential Portuguese club into the mix, naturally because of his history, where he comes from, etc., that type of thing? Because it does seem there's quite a few connections, doesn't it, with Liverpool, Portugal, and what's happening at the moment as well.
Yeah, I mean, he's also someone who worked with Julian Edwards at Manchester City in the past. Strange that we're getting all these former Man City.
Yeah.
But, you know, there was a time when they were stealing our best coaching staff like Rodolfo Burrell and et cetera. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it serves them right that we get a few back from them. But yeah, he seems to have a really good track record, especially working in academy football. Obviously, because of this report, everyone is now talking about Portuguese clubs.
Yeah.
Personally, I think having looked at the sort of market in Portuguese football, it does seem like there may be better options elsewhere, cheaper options for FSG. I know Sporting from the big clubs is looking for an investor, but they're not looking for a majority investor.
Right.
Although, you know, Sporting is a club that has very strong connections to Liverpool. There's always been sort of rumours under FSG from what I can remember of, like, you know, a potential partnership being struck up with them, dating back to the João Carlos Teixeira deal. When he signed, I don't know if you remember, but there was sort of that there could be an academy partnership forming after his arrival. That never materialised. More recently, I heard sort of whispers when Abdul Fatah was being linked with a move to Liverpool and then later signed for Sporting, that could have had some sort of involvement over some sort of deal, and then a partnership being struck with Sporting. There's always been these murmurs. So I think it's important to mention the fact that they are looking for investors. They've always had financial problems in the last decade, but they are only looking for minority investors. And given what Michael Edwards has said, given sort of what we know from FSG, I don't know if they are keen on minority investment. I think they're looking to you know, get a club outright and buy the majority stake in a club. And for that, obviously, I think the other big clubs are out of the questions. The likes of Braga, Porto, Benfica. I mean, they would be costly purchases and probably not worth it for FSG. And then looking around the smaller clubs, I think one that potentially could be up for sale is Boavista. We talked about Bordeaux as a club,
who,
you know, was a potential last week's episode. Boavista owned by the same owner as Bordeaux. They are kind. I don't think they have as many financial difficulties as Bordeaux, but that's given the fact that this owner isn't necessarily very successful with Bordeaux and is losing money. He might be more open to selling Boavista. I think he's had Boavista since 2021. His name is Gerard Lopez. They've got a decent sized stadium with 30,000, which I think is like when you're looking to buy a club, infrastructure is really important. I think FSG won't want to, you know, do what, I mean, they were quite open to building up Liverpool's infrastructure, but
yeah,
I think what they are, it would be a lot more ideal if that infrastructure is already in place and existed before. So for those reasons, that could be an option. And another one I looked at is Estoril, who I owned by David Blitzer. They also play in the top flight. Blitzer has owned them since 2019. They've got a 10,000 stadium, which is, you know, that capacity is not the highest, but it's still quite decent in the Portuguese level. Blitzer is in sort of has an interesting portfolio. He owns a few clubs in the US, not football clubs per se. Well, one of them is a football club, but the other is more sort of American sports orientated. He also has a few clubs in Europe aside from Estoril. He is a sort of a joint owner in Augsburg in the Bundesliga. He owns Brøndby in Denmark. And a few other clubs in like Spain and the Netherlands. I think it's ADO Den Haag or something like that in the Netherlands. So he's got a big portfolio. What we know of FSG is they like to do business with fellow Americans. So that's why Estoril kind of stood out to me, because of the American factor, the fact that Blitzer has, you know, he's not clinging on to this club. He has other clubs in his roster that might make him open to selling. But for me, looking at the market, I still think FSG are more likely to be looking at, you know, French, Belgian sides. Someone posted on social media, I can't remember who, about Saint-Étienne as well. They are struggling financially. Like Bordeaux, they've got a 40,000 capacity stadium, very historic club, you know. They seem like sleeping giants. I'd assume their facilities in terms of their training ground and everything is up to a high standard. So when those kind of clubs are on the market and, you know, FSG could get them for less, but given the infrastructure, given the fan base, given everything else, there's a lot more potential there than investing in a club like Boa Vista or Estoril.
Makes sense. Yeah, it's Boa Vista and Estoril ones to keep an eye on. Yeah, funny how history goes around. Like you said, Harris and Blitzer, at one time they were linked with investment in Liverpool, weren't they, when that first, well, however it was described at the time, but when it was rumoured that FSG were looking for investment at the same time as well. So will be definitely one to keep an eye on. I think the interesting thing is, people, Pedro Marquez and those rumours of the appointment, this is maybe moving a lot quicker than people thought it would as well. So let's keep an eye out for more things over the coming weeks and months, as it were. And the final bit I wanted to ask you about, last week we talked about your strongest midfield and you got a chance to do your Endo love, as we know, Ben, and your stats and Szoboszlai. Unsurprisingly, it was an Endo, Szoboszlai, McAllister loving, for obvious reasons, to be fair, at the same time. Let's talk the back four, back five, you could say as well, naturally, isn't it, with the keeper in play, the defence, more importantly. Maybe an easy question in one way, but tough to answer. Stats-wise, what do you think, or what do the stats tell you, is the best back four, as it were, on paper, based on what you can see from a stats perspective?
Well, I think, you know, I'm going to sort of go off the metrics, the key defensive metrics that the players on average rank the highest in, like, the top five, four. So Van Dijk, I mean, there's probably no surprise there. He gets in. He wins the highest aerial duels in the Premier League. And I think ranks quite highly for total aerial duels won as well in Europe's top five leagues. So, you know, that alone, it makes him an obvious choice. He wins a high amount of his defensive duels, ranks for possession or just interceptions and so on. But I don't think that is news to anyone.
No, not at all.
No surprise. I think what intrigued me is when I was looking at sort of the partner around him, and obviously the obvious choice is probably Konate, and I go with Konate as well. And one of the reasons why is because I think it's been kind of overlooked, but his passing range and his sort of progressing passes and getting passes into the final third and making forward passes is actually really good. He ranks in the top five among centre-backs for progressive passes and forward passes as well. And I think, you know, he's got that ability in him to make those penetrative passes, which I think is quite valuable. Now, obviously, in the long term, I think you've got to mention Kwanza. We've already talked about him. He's got the dribbling ability. He also ranks quite well. He has the best defensive duel percentage out of Liverpool centre backs in the Premier League. Much smaller sample size. So obviously that's going to have an impact, but still it's quite impressive that he is winning such a high volume of defensive duels and averaging a high volume as well. And I think the most intriguing stat about him, what people don't necessarily realizes he's really good in the air as well. So naturally, Konate and Van Dijk, we've already mentioned that they're good in the air. But if we're looking at centre-backs who average six defensive duels per 90 or more, Kwanza actually has the best success rate in the Premier League. And even when it comes to, I think, 5.5 or five defensive duels per 90, five aerial duels per 90, sorry. Again, Kwanza ranks in the top five among Premier League centre-backs. So that is not bad at all from a 20-year-old centre-back who, you know, has still played more minutes in League One football than he has in the Premier League. But I would say he's now got 600 minutes under his belt, which is a sort of considerable sample size to go off of and isn't a minuscule one by any means. Obviously, we'll get a clearer picture of him when he gets those 1,500 minutes in the Premier League. It will become a lot clearer where he's at, but right now he's showing really good and positive signs. So I think he just doesn't get into the best Liverpool 11 or the best back four. And then the fullbacks, I think... Yeah, I mean, Conor Bradley has been fantastic. He's got seven goal contributions now. People sort of missed the fact that he got an assist in the United game. I mean, I'm not sure how much he had to do with that Harvey Elliott goal. But, you know,
it counts.
It counts, yeah. Those seven goal contributions is actually more than Tsimikas and Robertson has on the left side for Liverpool combined this season. So that's impressive in itself. But, you know, Trent Alexander-Arnold is Trent Alexander-Arnold. And I think until the moment when he stops being classified as a right-back, he is Liverpool's first-choice right-back. So you got to go with him. Like, his creative numbers are still unreal. Ranks the highest for Liverpool when it comes to key passes, expected assists, and all those things for 90. So you can't overlook him. He has to be in the team. I think, again, with the left-back position, although Robertson, I don't think he has been his best this season, he just, given his status, given what he has achieved, he gets there on merit. Although I do think in the long term there is a conversation to be had whether, you know, his position is something Michael Edwards has a look at, you know, with 2 years left on his contract. Obviously, his form hasn't been all that. I think he's got one goal and one assist in the Premier League. In all competitions for Liverpool this season, which is, you know, yes, he has missed a lot of games due to injury, but he still played around 20 games, and that is not the Robertson that we know, and that is not the Robertson in his prime. So if this sort of form persists, I think Edwards and the data team will have a look on the market if there is a better potential alternative.
Yeah, it wouldn't be any surprise at all if there was a left back being looked at seriously by Liverpool this summer. I think that's a general feeling from the fan base as well. And I suppose the only final thing, Ben, we've got an international break coming up. So is the simple hope for you just get everyone back, get everyone fit? I mean, the good news we've had is Mo Salah has been withdrawn from Egypt for the friendly. And Darwin Núñez has withdrawn from the Uruguay squad. Again, a team that was set to play two friendlies. It sounds like he's got a minor injury, with the hope for us, the expectation that obviously he's fit for that Brighton game. So is it just about now getting players fit, rested, ready for Brighton? Is that it for you? Simple as that. And hoping everyone comes home unscathed, as it were.
Yeah, I think so. I forgot to mention as well, from the back five, I just wanted to bring it back to this, that Kelleher has actually got more prevented goals in the Premier League this season than Alisson. So in seven games, he's got 2.16 prevented goals. Alisson has played, I think, 20, and he's got 1.33. So almost by one prevented goal, Gallagher has more than Alisson in the Premier League this season, which is pretty impressive. Per 90, he ranks third place among goalkeepers for prevented goals. So that's pretty impressive. And even in the Carabao Cup, he had sort of 1.98 prevented goals. So if you're looking at his prevented goals overall for Liverpool this season, it's a pretty impressive amount. And, you know, I know you were going to ask me in the plan if he gets sold at the end of the season. I don't know. I mean, one part of me is like, you're never going to get more money for him than now. But another part of me is, I know it's a small sample size. I know, you know, it's you know, maybe it's recency bias, but the way he has performed, I'm sort of seeing an Alisson air in him, and Alisson is not getting any younger, you know, for goalkeepers, he's still relatively in his prime. But in the coming years, will Liverpool, you know, sort of regret selling Kelleher now and then having to find a replacement for Alisson when Kelleher is almost, for me, he's would be the best prepared to take over the Alisson throne in, you know, however many years that is. But again, from his perspective, it also just depends on what he wants, because he's not getting any younger himself. Although, you know, he's I think he's my age, so it feels strange to say that about someone. But, you know, as a goalkeeper, he'll probably want to play and be a number one goalkeeper. Just, you know, for the sake of his own career, and also I think for the sake of his international career. I think even though he's been brilliant for Ireland, I've seen a lot of Irish people still say Bazunu should be starting ahead of him, which is strange for me. But you know, that's for them to decide anyway. So yeah, I think it's a complicated issue. Selfishly, I think Liverpool should want to keep Gallagher, but he is an academy player. You know, he's been at the club for such a long time, and with that sentimentality factor, maybe you've got to consider his best interests as well.
Yeah, I think it does have that feeling that as brilliant as he's been, and those stats are interesting, absolutely fascinating. Yeah, in certain ones, and where he's rivaling the great man in goal, that the genie feels a bit out of the bottle, doesn't it? Now it's hard to see Queeve going back to being happy with 6-7 cup games a season, isn't it? Especially with how everything's going at the moment and how he's done in high pressure situations. Time will tell on that one. Time will tell, ladies and gents, on what happens with Liverpool. But we probably feel a little bit better, a little bit cathartic talking it all through. An international break beckons, hopefully, fingers crossed, touch wood and everything, that with it being friendlies galore, Liverpool players will not be risked too much, as it were, but let's just say. So all it really leaves me to say, ladies and gents, is Ben, for the insight, for the stats as ever, thank you very much for the time and the research. Much appreciated.
Yeah, thank you. And for the next 2 weeks, I'm going to be anxiously keeping my fingers crossed and watching all the international games, hoping no injuries for any Liverpool players.
Yeah, I did give Ben the stats homework of how we do injury-wise on the international break, because no one wants to see, hear or read anything in regards to that. So fingers and everything crossed, eh, people? Because that was another Stat Me Up for Anfield Index.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this Anfield Index show. Please be sure to subscribe to our channel so future podcasts find their way to your device automatically. There's nothing quite like fan engagement, and we'd love to know what you think of anything discussed on this show. The best way to get in touch is over on our free Discord community, where both podcasters and listeners debate the hottest LFC topics 24/7. Sign up free now at anfieldindex.com/discord. You won't regret it. You can also follow us on Twitter at Anfield Index and find us on Facebook by searching for Anfield Index. Oh, and before you go, we'd love it if you could leave us a 5-star review on your favourite podcast app. It only takes a couple of seconds, and it means the world to the people who create these free shows.
Sports Social Podcast Network.